Hi, Jill.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. I don't know if I can pause the recording. It looks like I am not.
I just clicked the link. Do you want me to go out?
No. I just think that I'm not a
I didn't push record either.
No, it's set up to automatically record, and I'm clearly not an admin person on this call, so I can't pause it. So I'll just tell Frances to cut out the beginning part here.
It sounds
But
good.
do you have a button where you can share your screen?
Okay, let's see.
Perfect. That works. Good news.
Yeah, there's something funny about it though. It's not moving.
Oh, you can't forward to the next.
There we go.
Yeah, sometimes there's a glitch and it takes a few seconds for it to work.
So I put this first slide. It's still glitching. It's funny, it won't go to my very, very first slide. Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, can you?
I put this first. Can you see this?
I can, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, there's somebody else on, isn't there?
Barbara, hello.
Hi, Barbara. Hi, Janet.
How are you?
Good morning.
Okay.
Can you put it on the slideshow, or do you need to keep it in this view?
Man. I'm clicking on slideshow and it's not doing it. I wonder why.
Well, do you want to try to stop your share for a minute and do it that way? Stop the share and then go in and see if you can get it on slideshow and then share. If not, it's fine for us to see the slides on the side.
There, right?
Oh, it says you're in protected view.
Also, I wanted to get the participants instead of on the side, on the top. I don't know how I did that yesterday.
You move it, so you bring your cursor over.
So I've got here, I'm pulling you
And then,
over, but you're still in a column.
It's not, if you pull it, push it to the very top corner. For me, if I push,
Oh, there it goes. I got it.
okay, good. Now, for me and my system, I can't move the video participants from the side to the top while I'm in slideshow. I can only do it when I'm in this view. I don't know if that's the case for you, but that's the case for me. So I made sure, I like to make sure that my participants are on the top view before I share my screen.
Okay, but we're in share now, right?
We are, yeah.
So I can just leave it right here, right?
You can. Well, I don't want it to be on share when we first start the call, and then I'll have you share your screen when we're ready to start the presentation.
Okay, so here's my stop. Oh, and there's that. And then I would have to go on Oh, see, there, it didn't let me do slideshow again.
I haven't been able to see your view in slideshow at all. I can see this. No, I still see it with your slides on the left side.
Huh. Because it did change. Can you see that?
You're not sharing currently.
Oh, dear. Where do I go now? Okay. So it won't let me click on slideshow. I'm clicking on slideshow, but it's not taking it to the full screen like we want it.
Right. Which is fine. We can do it this way.
It was funny because when I did it before, it worked for me, but it didn't work for you. You know?
No, I didn't see it in the full slideshow mode. I still saw it in this mode with the slides on the side on the deck.
Maybe I should.
But it worked last night, right? Because when we practiced, I saw the full slideshow.
Yeah, so how did we do that? I'm stopping again. Maybe this will work. Okay, hold on. So I clicked one. Let me see if this one works. I clicked it on slideshow on the computer. Oh, it didn't work still. Huh. Well, might just have to be this. Unless you can tell me how to do
that. I don't know how else to change that. I don't know how to do that other than pressing the slideshow button.
Yeah, I went back to PowerPoint and I put it on slideshow. Mm-hmm. But then to get back to Zoom, I had to escape to go back to Zoom.
Yeah, that happens for me at least it does when I'm in the slideshow mode, I have to escape to get back. Yeah.
So that's what, I guess it didn't transfer. Does anybody else know what to do?
No, we could try it again. Maybe if you stop your share, why don't you stop your share and then go into slideshow before you share the screen?
Back to PowerPoint.
Yeah, go back to your PowerPoint. Don't share it yet. When you're in the PowerPoint screen, press slide share or slideshow, and then press share your screen.
Okay, so on slideshow under that, I went over to from beginning, you know, mm-hmm. on the far left. Mm-hmm. And it took me into the full, now it's in the full screen.
Okay, now if you share your screen.
But there's no Zoom things for me to share it.
Yeah, you got to toggle. If you can take your mouse cursor way up to the top of the screen, do you see
it's
the button might come down there for you to share?
Yeah, there's no buttons for me at all, actually.
Okay, if you take your cursor, your mouse cursor up to the very top and kind of move it around. You're not seeing a drop down come down?
There's no drop down at all. without.
How did you get? How did we do that yesterday?
I don't know. I'm wondering. I mean, I know you had me go to slideshow yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm. And I think I went to beginning. Wonder, no. So I don't know how we did that.
Well, would you like me to open it up? You emailed it. Do you want me to try and navigate, or do you want to just, I think it's fine in that view, but
yeah,
it's your presentation.
I'm fine just doing it this way and then figure it out again another time, I guess.
Okay.
If that's okay.
I think that's just fine.
Okay.
Oh, good. We got a few more people coming on the call. We have Valerie Mills, yay, and Judy. Nice. Give it maybe one more minute or 2 minutes, and then we'll get started on the presentation. Glad to have everyone on the call. What's the weather like where you guys are at? Where are you? You're in Minnesota, Jill. Is it snowing there like here?
No, it's very, very cold.
Is it?
So a little bit of snow yesterday, but not much. But it's,
yeah. Oh, I had Lynn on a call this morning. She had her hat on. It was so cold.
Yeah, it's very, very cold today. Like, I don't know, I haven't checked, but I'm sure it's in the single digits or lower.
Mm. Okay, we have Dawn and Jenny. Welcome. So, let's see here. I have 11:01. Hopefully we'll have a few more people getting onto the call, but I'm super excited. This is our February FNC office hours call, and we're so lucky today to have Jill Woodward on the call. She's going to be talking about talk therapy and brain health. And I am so excited about her presentation because what she is talking about ties in a lot to my passion of working with the nervous system and the brain regarding trauma. So she has some really great things to share with us on talk therapy and brain health. So it looks like we're getting a few more people on the call here. That's very nice. Maybe we'll give it just another minute. Do you want to just say hi, Jill, and introduce yourself quickly before we go into the formal presentation?
Well, hi, everybody. I'm super excited to be here today with you and to share things that I've been involved with for many years. So I'll give you a formal introduction when we start the screen share, but I've been living in Minnesota for over 30 years in this cold state and have had a lot of great learning experiences and met some wonderful people that have helped me that have mentored me and helped me learn to where I am up to this point in time. And life's good. We're just going to keep learning.
And Jill has been a student in the NEPT program, and she has done the transpersonal energy healing course. And so she has a lot of skills and a lot of experience and make her an expert on this topic. So I'm super excited to have her share with us. So Jill, since it is 11:03 my time, I'm in mountain time, 12:03 your time. Well, why don't we go ahead and you can start to share your screen and start the presentation. This is Talk Therapy and Brain Health with Jill Woodward. And I appreciate everybody staying on mute unless you have a question, because I can't mute you.
All right. Can everybody see and hear me? Yeah?
Yes.
Yes. Very good. Okay. Our discussion today, as Kimberly said, is on talk therapy and brain health. We will go over what kind of talk therapy specifically I'm talking about. We'll review a few therapy techniques and talk a little bit about brain self-care. So, like I said, my name is Jill Woodward. I am a teacher and an energy therapist. I began my teaching career after I received my degree in elementary education and visually impaired many years ago. I taught in the public school briefly, and then later, after having six beautiful sons, began to homeschool my sons and did that for many, many years. I have coached individuals in health for the last 16 years. Two of my passions are music and health, and I taught music for 5 years in a homeschool co-op, and then I'm currently continuing my journey as a piano teacher I've been going at that for 25 years. I have achieved multiple certificates regarding energy and health, and one of my first couple of certificates were in Reiki and the bioenergetic synchronization technique, which is a non-forceful chiropractic technique taught by the Mortars, Dr. M.T. Mortar Jr., two-time chiropractic president of two colleges, developed this technique over 40 years ago, and I had the opportunity to learn it 16 years ago and have been doing it ever since. It's an amazing technique. I later got certificates in the emotion code, access bars consciousness, transpersonal energy healing, several life and power habit coaching certificates, gluten-free certificate, heal your hunger emotional eating coach, and I'm in the middle of my nutritional endocrinology practitioner program with Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo. I love helping others and through energy techniques and teaching. That is my passion. As a medical disclaimer, the information in this presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it is not intended as medical advice. It is intended as a sharing of knowledge and information from my training and my experience. And I encourage you to make your own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. Oops. So I love this quote by Henry David Thoreau. It is not what you look at that matters, it is what you see. Many years ago, I had the diagnosis of depression. And so this quote really goes deep for me because I was choosing to look at certain things, to see certain things, and my perception was messed up, basically, as I was having this experience with depression. We'll look at some of the choices and knowledge and perspectives that we can have on brain health. But in the end, it is what we see and understand that makes all the difference. So years ago, when I was in the grip of that depression, some of my wonderful sons decided to put a quote on a poster up on the ceiling in my bedroom above my bed. And it's this quote from Helen Keller, who could not see, "Keep your face to the sunshine and you cannot see the shadows." So this had great meaning to me, not only as a mom, that my children would find this poster and they framed it and they said, "Mom, go outside." I went out into the other room and they shut the door and I hear these banging and hammering. I'm like, "Oh no, what are they doing to the room?" But I came back in and there was this beautiful poster that is still there today. So all I have to do is lay down on my bed and I see this beautiful quote to remind me to keep my face in the sunshine. It made a huge difference. Part of my journey in healing myself from depression was to go to counselors. So I spent some years going to counselors. I felt like this little egg. I felt kind of broken. And I thought that this counselor probably, whichever one it was, had the answers to my problems. And he never did say, visualize yourself not falling off the wall. I just felt like I had already fallen off the wall and there was, and I didn't know how to get out of it. So I listened to these counselors. Some of them gave me some very good advice and others did not give me some good advice. And so I got even more confused in some ways because I was listening to them and not to myself. That's when I began to realize that perhaps my thoughts were the ones that I should listen to. They wanted me to take medications, and I knew medications would only cover up the symptom. I had learned that from years of acne medication that I took when I was a teenager. It never fixed anything, and so I refused the medication that they recommended for me. So I continue to have lessons and experiences related to this depression. I eventually learned that my brain was actually a thing that I could develop and grow and take care of, and that my thoughts were very, very important to my brain and the health of my brain. I began to, through training with Mortar Health System, learned this important belief. Your beliefs create your reality. This was the beginning of understanding that I was very much a part of the creation of this experience of depression that I had. What beliefs then? I was like, well, what am I believing that could be causing this experience with depression? I didn't know. I didn't know what I was believing. So I just decided I would keep learning and keep growing, and also that I would start evaluating what my beliefs were. And the one of the thoughts that I learned was to think about what you think about when you think about it. And so I thought I had a good set of beliefs. I had wonderful parents, and they cared for me and treated me well. And so I just couldn't see how I had a set of bad beliefs. But the beliefs that I really came to realize that had the cracks and the faults were the beliefs that I had about myself. Some of those beliefs maybe I acquired through teachers and family members, whoever. But I think a lot of those beliefs I created myself from my experience. So be careful how you are talking to yourself, because you are listening. I love this quote, because I finally came to realize that I was talking to myself and that what I was saying to myself was making a difference in my life experience. And so I began to evaluate what I was saying to myself, how I was thinking, and was coming to understand the effect that my thoughts had upon me and my physical body. So the talk therapy that I'm talking about today is self-talk. It's the talk therapy that you're doing to yourself. Here's a picture of a healthy brain and one on chronic depression. Now, I didn't have a picture of my brain at that time. I still don't have a picture of my brain. I would love to get one of those someday, but this is a picture of what my brain may have looked like when I was in the depths of chronic depression. So here's a human communication model. Here you can see on the right-hand side, it says 2.5 million events per second. So we are sensory beings. We have these 5-6 senses, I can like to say. And everything that's coming into us every second of the day is being recorded, not only in our brain, but in our physical body. As this information, this sensory information comes into us, it goes through what I call the filters in our mind. And if you could look here in the center, we have our values and beliefs, our attitudes, the decisions we make about our life, the traits that we have and our personalities, all the memories that we have acquired from our beginning of time, our language and time and space. All of these things, if you can imagine them like screens on our mind, that then it's taken these from the sensory system through our filters into the internal representation, and then to a state of being. It affects our personality, it affects our choices, and it affects how we end up behaving. It affects our physiology, as you can see down here, whether we're healthy or not healthy. Obviously, my experience years ago was that my filters, some of those filters, and some of my external events that had happened because I had a trauma that really was the catalyst that took me into this depression, and then going through the filters, I became into a state of depression, which then affected my physiology. I'm sure it affected my brain and ended up in the behaviors that I ended up having. Now, some people, when they go through a trauma or have are having a difficult time with something, they will withdraw, which was my typical pattern of behavior, was I tended to withdraw. I withdrew from people in social situations. Some people will throw out that stress and become very angry. There's different ways that we will behave in order to deal with these stresses. So, regarding talk therapy and brain health, it might feel like we are chasing the tiger's tail, and we have no clue what to do, which is the way I felt. I had no clue what to do to heal. That's why my initial choice was to go out to the counselor to see if he could help me heal, and that wasn't the case. It can feel a bit overwhelming, especially for a person who has some kind of mental disorder, and becomes so overwhelming that we can go into what is called a freeze state. So I'm here to help you today to understand and to get a hold of the tiger's tail and do some things that can help people with brain issues. So I love this picture of total brain health. We can't look at the brain and what's going on without looking at our body, our mind, and our spirit. So our body obviously involves what we're eating. I'm going to go down here to this next slide for a minute. What we eat and what kind of food we're eating, what we're drinking, how we're thinking, as I just mentioned, how we are resting, and are we getting good rest? Whether or not we're moving our body, our bodies are made to move. And then what our breathing is like. Sometimes we breathe very shallowly, you know, very shallow breath instead of deep breath and from the belly. We also, for total brain health, need to consider the mind and whether or not we're sharpening our skills, whether or not we continue to grow and learn new things, using both sides of the brain, using the artistic, creative abilities, and also our analytical side of the brain. Also, we cannot consider brain health without considering our spirit, which in this slide talks about believing in yourself. There again, it's all the beliefs that we have about ourselves, how our emotional balance is, and what our community is like, the people that we're associating with. So we are spirit beings having a physical experience here on Earth. And I like this picture because it is showing that light and it's emanating out from us. So we consider that emanation out, that spirit body, if I could call it, as our aura, which extends out within that auric space outside of our body, is held within that space, our emotions and our thoughts and beliefs. Moving on here, we see this is a picture of a cell, and Dr. M.T. Mortar Jr. said we live and die at the cellular level, and that's why what I just shared with you about what you eat, drink, think, breathe, move, and rest is very important, because all of those things affect the very cell, each of the trillions of cells that we have within our body. And the body is a self-functioning mechanism, and as long as we give the body what it needs, then it can be healthy. And that's why I included in that other slide the importance of what we're thinking. Bruce Lipton is a cellular biologist, and he said, we operate from the conscious mind less than 5% of the day. Can you imagine that? Everything we're doing is a response from our subconscious mind. Unless the subconscious mind has the same programming as the conscious mind, the power of positive thinking will not work. And I mentioned a little bit later about how important there is needs to be a resonance or a synchronization between the subconscious mind and the conscious mind. He also said your perception of any given thing at any given moment can influence your brain chemistry, which in turn affects the environment of your cells, that where your cells reside, and controls their fate. I had the opportunity to hear him speak years ago, and he talked about fear and love and how the cell actually can shrink a little bit in fear and expand just a little bit in love. He did work with what is now called epigenetics. And epigenetics is the study of the cell and the effects of the environment on the cells. And in this slide, you can see here over on the right, they're talking about our environment, whether we have clean air and water and good soil for our food to grow in, obviously no smoking. Over here, the effect of exercise on the cell, our nutritional factors, what kind of food we're eating is affecting the cell, and then our emotional health, what kind of beliefs we hold to, whether or not we are getting in touch with ourselves as a spirit being. That can be clouded over by a lot of different beliefs. But the important thing is that we get in touch with that spiritual self. So I've talked about all these different things. It could feel confusing and overwhelming, like I said. Do we really have choice? Is there really a way to have choice in the midst of all this? And I'm saying to you today, there is choice, regardless of what your epigenetic background is. And by epigenetics, I mean everything that has come to you through your family line, so that there's the genes, your genes and your DNA, but it's also the patterns of thought and behavior that have come through your ancestral line, and also the very environment that you're in today. All of these things are affecting our health and our well-being. I'm a melting pot person. I have three main countries that my family line came from. Ireland, England, and Wales. And I think it's interesting. I really identify with Ireland. I am a dancer. I clog, and that which is a melting pot dance that is sort of similar to Irish dancing. I love the color green, and I love potatoes, although I don't eat them very much. My great-great-grandmother was a violinist, and another ancestor of mine was a composer. And I wonder, well, how much did that influence? My parents, however, were not musical. So this musical interest and musical talent and ability, I believe, came from my epigenetic background. So I have been, like I said, a piano teacher and a music teacher for many years. And my six sons, I gave them opportunities, and they all became amazing musicians. I have two violinists, a cellist, two pianists, and a drummer. They're all amazing, and some of them are professionals, and one of them also is a composer. When I actually found out that there was a violinist and a composer in my family line, I just thought that was so neat. So explore your own family line. You never know what you will find about yourself from looking back into your epigenetics. Epigenetics has such a strong factor. If you think of someone who might come from a very obese family, being in the environment, eating the food, thinking the thoughts, all those, you know, exercise or no exercise can affect whether or not that person turns on the cells and the genes to create that obesity or not. So I really do believe you have power to choose. Who is here first, your body or your spirit? Well, your spirit came first, but the body was created, so then they are together. So I like this picture because here's the little chicken and the egg kind of having a little argument over who was here first. So I asked my husband. My husband grew up on a chicken farm. He has been an egg researcher all of his adult life. And so I asked him, well, which came first, the chicken or the egg? And here's a picture of him. And he definitely said the chicken came first. Here he is. If you look on the right, these are not kind of fuzzy pictures, but I had to share them. Of some the 1950s when they had cage-free chicken. And my husband was this little five-year-old that had to go running around there picking up their eggs. And it's pretty hard to avoid the pecks of those chickens on his little hands. So that's what it was like for him. And then here he is a little bit older in the 60s. They had to clean every single egg. It was a very long process. But they went from his grandfather getting 10 chickens as a wedding present, and it grew into a very, very large chicken operation as it is today in Idaho and Washington and Utah. So pretty hard to separate which came first, the chicken or the egg, but he said the chicken. back to the idea of my mental health experience that I had. This condition, plus many other conditions, which I later found out from doing my 23andMe gene status, that I did have some weak genes when it came to brain health. I also have family members who also had, I don't think they knew what their gene codes were, but I had a cousin who passed away with MS. I have an aunt and an uncle that had passed away from Alzheimer's, a grandmother that had a stroke. My father had Parkinson's. So I became very interested, not only from my own experience with depression, but because of the experience of other family members with brain health. There was an analysis done by the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation in 2016. It was an article called Brain Disorders and Diseases, the Cost of the U.S. Economy. And it says here, in addition to the, if you look at the red part, the significant human costs, mental and neurological disorders and diseases cost the U.S. economy more than $1.5 trillion per year. That's 8.8% of the gross domestic product. So this article is showing the importance of what they were saying, learning to diagnose, treat, and cure. And I look at it from a completely different way than they probably do. So, but I thought this was interesting to see how what a big impact it's making on our society.
Yeah, that's a huge impact. I don't think most people really understand the impact that's having on us as a society in general. I love that you brought that up. I wanted to just mention, I'm not sure, somebody's not muted, and there's some background noise. So if you guys could all please make sure you're on mute. I don't have the ability to mute you from behind. So if you are not muted, please mute yourself. Thank you.
Thanks, all Kimberly. Right. I did hear a few things in the background, but
thanks.
Yeah, I mean, outside of, you know, when you think of the human, that's the cost of our economy, but the human cost, you know, sometimes people have to take time off work. I have a client who was in the middle of chiropractic school and became severely disabled from the bipolar diagnosis, and he had to quit school. And some people miss work, and they're not able to focus or be very efficient. So there's a great cost to us as human beings and society and us together as a community.
Yeah. Well, and I know that depression is the number one cause of disability in this country. That's huge.
Huge. Yes.
1 in 13 people are on psychiatric medications.
And oh, that,
sorry,
that
13 out of 100 people, 13% is how I should say that. 13% of us.
That's crazy, isn't it?
The cost of that, and then the cost of the disability for brain injuries and depression is really astronomical.
It is. It is. And I mean, from having gone through it, I wouldn't want that experience on anyone. And that's why I became so passionate about seeking knowledge and understanding how can someone heal from this besides a medication. And I'm grateful that I chose not to take medication because I actually now have myself as an example of someone who healed from depression without medication. So it is possible.
Wonderful.
So what do we need to look at? I've already mentioned some of these things. This slide just shows we need to notice, what are my physical symptoms? Am I run down and tired? Do I sleep well or not? Do I have a poor appetite? One of my sons who has had depression had a very poor appetite, never wanted to eat. And by the way, this experience of depression has been so personal to me as well, because I have had several of my beautiful sons suffer from depression and one of them from bipolar. And so it was a very, very personal journey for me to learn this information and to continue learning information as well. Person might have fibromyalgia and not realize how depressed they are and how depression and physical symptoms are tied in together. As I mentioned earlier, we can withdraw from others. We can stop doing enjoyable activities and just kind of check out of life. Our thoughts can be all over the place, from nothing good ever happens to me, life's not worth living, you know, my future looks bleak and I'm worthless, you know, all kinds of negative thoughts. And then the thoughts are connected to the feelings. So I can feel overwhelmed, unhappy, irritable, and indecisive. Here's all just a cute little picture of some of the different emotions that we can experience in life that are not always so pleasant to deal with. So jumping into a few things that I want to share with you that you can do for yourself with talk therapy, one of the things that I explored was the work. It's called The Work. So it is the work by Byron Katie called The Work. And I simplified the very first statement. The work is actually four-step process. I revised it slightly. The first statement I have here is for us to recognize how we're feeling. And although we could go to a big chart that has, you know, I have a list of 140 emotions that we could be feeling, I'm simplifying it into four simple ones: happy, sad, mad, or despondent. And what I mean by despondent is, I don't know, I'm having so many emotions or feelings, I don't know what I'm feeling. It could be that kind of thing, or it could be, I have no clue what I'm feeling. It, you know, that from that freeze state. The second is to ask, what am I thinking about? What is my focus right now that I'm thinking about that I think might be making me sad or mad or despondent? Or happy. And then ask yourself, is what I think true? Is what I'm thinking about this situation or this event or myself, is that true? And then, this is a really important one. Can you absolutely know that it's true? Someone might say, well, I'm not smart. Is that true? Well, I know it's not true. They might feel like they're not smart, so they might think it's true. So the feeling can be deceptive to the person and cause them to want to believe that that negative statement about themselves is true. But that's why this, can you absolutely know it's 100% true? It's not 100% true. And you have physical, or, you know, you have evidence from the past proving that you do have a good mind and you are smart and you've done this and this and this, and those are evidences that it's not true. Once I am holding to this, what I call a false belief, how do I react when I believe that thought? And we went on that other slide, talked about some of the different kinds of behaviors that I might have by believing that thought. Who would I be without that thought or behavior? And that takes us into a creative state. That is an expansive question. Who would I be without that thought and behavior? Well, I might be able to think that I am smart and I can think and reason and I can create and I can do all these things. I am smart. So the turnaround statement then, what is your turnaround thought? I am smart. Sometimes we have to massage the thought process a little bit. That's what I like to call it, by saying I'm learning to believe I'm smart. So that's one other way to lead us to believing that positive thought.
Jill, could I interrupt here just for a second? I love the work of Byron Katie. I think it's awesome, but I really like what you just said about really giving yourself the space and time to really question that, because some people, ourselves and some of our clients, might have some metabolic issues that are really leading to some of these symptoms, and they might not be able to see that it's not true, right? They might be so attached to that it is true. So being able to work with them where they're at and encourage them to gently try to perceive it a little bit differently. But I know, you know, because you've had that serious depression, how you can really buy into those stories. And okay, let's be here in that moment if we really buy into it. And then, as you said, look at the whole being. There's a biological process that's keeping that thought stuck.
Absolutely. And I'll mention a little bit of that kind of care a little bit later. But this is so important in, you know, grabbing hold of the tiger's tail. to begin to consider, what am I thinking? What do I think about when I think about it?
Mm-hmm. Right. And a way for you as a practitioner to kind of judge, where is the client? Are they really stuck in that thought and don't see any possibility of a different thought or behavior? Then we might have to work at a different level with them to help them get to the place where they can see other options.
Yeah, and that's why I liked this part of what would I be without that thought?
Yeah.
Because I may have never, when I was depressed, I had forgotten what it was like to be happy. Mm-hmm. It's like a dark cloud over the mind, and we can't imagine. Even it's hard to imagine. And so that brings in, you know, the idea of visualization and the importance of visualizing. And I haven't really gone into that in this talk, but it is a very important piece to help a person begin to see themselves in a different way, so that they may begin to believe the turnaround thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
thank you.
So there's a few rules. Some people don't like rules, but I really believe that rules can make a big difference in the mind. So here are a few rules, not too many. Never, ever, ever diminish yourself. So if your thought is a diminishing thought, I'm not smart, I'm not enough, whatever, that's a diminishing thought. Never diminish yourself. Never go away from your goal of being a better person, developing yourself. No beating up on yourself. And always do pattern interrupting and self-soothing. And what I mean by pattern interrupting is if I have a negative thought, if the thought was, I'm not enough, and that's a negative thought, I would need to recognize it. Oh, hello. I can even say, thank you. I don't want that thought. So then I do a purposeful turnaround. And sometimes it is so important to distract oneself from that thought. Recognize it, say no thank you, and then go put your thought on something else. But like you said earlier, Kimberly, that the emotion can be so overwhelming. And think about addiction. Addiction is very, very overpowering. Whether it's an actual toxicity kind of addiction from alcohol or drugs or something like that, or food, or it could be an emotional addiction, an addiction to negative thinking and to negative feeling. Those can be addictions as well. And so it's very important that we break up the pattern and learn to self-soothe. So those are my rules. Never diminish yourself. Never go away from your goal of being healthy and happy. No beating up on yourself. Always do pattern interrupting. I'm going to mention that a little bit later. And self-soothe. I explored many different energy techniques. I explored tapping, emotion code, healing codes, and there's a few others. the technique that I embrace the most and still do today is the bioenergetic synchronization technique, or short acronym BEST, developed by Dr. Mortar. And this technique, and one of his exercises that he developed called the Mortar March, was a way to begin to help the body in that auric field to release the energy behind the thought and the belief. So if you see at the bottom here, it says MortarMarchMonday.com. I like free things. I think everybody does. If you go to MortarMarchMonday.com, you will learn how to do this exercise and learn how to do it so that you can begin to loosen the grip of the powerful belief that you're living your life from that's in the subconscious mind. This is a very powerful, in fact, this, we went to a big conference many years ago when Dr. Mortar first taught this exercise called the Mortar March. And our family learned this. And my son, who had the bipolar diagnosis, went home. We did not live near each other. He went home and did this every single day, multiple times a day, to help himself to release some of the emotions and the false beliefs that he was thinking. And it was so powerful that it helped him to heal from his diagnosis. That's a pretty powerful thing. And so thankful. So I wanted to encourage you to go to mortarmarchmonday.com. You can sign up for free. You can learn it for free. You can begin to release the power of the grip of those negative beliefs and thoughts that you have and that I have. We all have them. Well, another technique that I used is called the Ho'oponopono prayer. I grew up believing in prayer, and I didn't always know the best way to pray. And was there a best way to pray? When I came across this Ho'oponopono prayer, and I learned about it from Joe Vitale, if any of you know him, this really put it in a simple form. And basically it says, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. So we're all in relationships with people, we're in close relationships, and we're always having relationship experiences. So sometimes those experiences in our relationships can cause us trouble. At the time of my depression, I not only had the trauma, one of the big traumas was my son's illness, but I also had marriage trauma. But I would call it trauma, even though I felt it was the lesser of the traumas. But I needed to do this. I needed to say to myself and to other people in my mind, I'm sorry, please forgive me. Forgive me for my part in what's happened. Thank you for the experience, for helping me to understand what I need to understand about myself. And I love you, giving forth love. I encourage everyone to use this on a daily basis to help not only with talking to yourself, but talking in your mind to others that you are in relationship with. Did you know that negative emotions can create nervous system chaos, but positive emotions do the opposite? The human heart, its magnetic field can be measured several feet away from the body. In fetal development, the heart forms and starts beating before the brain begins to develop. Positive emotions create physiological benefits in your body. And you can boost your immune system by focusing on positive emotions. Notice I said emotions, not thought, but the two are together. So, and then positive emotions can increase the brain's ability to make good decisions. We can't think about a healthy brain without understanding what the brain needs for food. We need to eat every day, and the food that we're eating is either giving us nutrients that will help our brain to function better, kind of like this picture, or the food that we're eating is taking away nutrients that we not only need, but could leave us in a deficit situation as far as nutrients. These are just a few nutrients that our bodies need: vitamin A, vitamin E, magnesium, omega-3s, protein, vitamin C, fiber, calcium, folic acid, but really the best form of that is folate and iron. All these are just some of the nutrients that our bodies need to have healthy functioning. And some of these are needed specifically for the brain. Here's another picture of 7 smart foods that can boost your brain power. And you can see that's turmeric there, and nuts and blueberries and broccoli and coconut oil and salmon, the omegas. Very, very important to explore what kinds of foods are going to give my brain a better chance of functioning. Now, we have a second brain. Did you know that? Our second brain is our gastrointestinal tract. We have 100 trillion microorganisms that live in your intestines and actually communicate with your brain. In a healthy gut, the bad bacteria struggle to flourish. And 70% of the body's immune system can be found in the digestive tract. Also, about 70 to 80% of the neurotransmitter serotonin receptors are found in the gastrointestinal tract. So very, very important that we have a healthy gut. Gut processes the food and produces vitamins, enzymes, and fatty acids, and more. Let's take care of our gut. You can see here I'm talking about the body as a whole now, and how important it is that we give the body and the brain what it needs. I'm going to swing us back around now to what is spirituality? What is it that causes us to make the decisions that we do? I've already mentioned that our subconscious brain is so powerful that I'm now asking us to connect in with our spirit, with the wisdom that we have, the truth that we already know to be true, and the faith, to activate faith. Faith is our power. It helps us to act on wisdom and truth. Because we are spirit beings, and because we have wisdom, truth, and faith, we have the power of choice to decide what we're going to do. That will make a difference in the health of our body. Our brain and our body are so integrally connected, and our heart is also communicating with our brain, and our brain with our heart. This is called coherence, and we can have good, healthy brain-heart connect, you know, coherence, or it can be out of coherence. Did you know that the heart has a system of neurons that have both short and long-term memory, and their signals sent to the brain can affect our emotional experiences? We cannot separate this body and spirit until we pass, and then we leave it. And as we leave that body, when we pass, we are leaving remnants of our choices from the body, and we're taking with us our energy, our emotion, our thoughts, our beliefs. This is not an impossible task. This looks impossible for this guy to jump over this big chasm, but I'm here to tell you that it's possible. To do some of the things that I've taught you earlier in this talk, it is very possible to overcome mental and physical ill health. It takes some work, but we need to love ourselves first. So everybody can do this right now. I learned sign language years ago, and I loved it when I found out that I could say, "I love you," to myself. So if you just turn your hand around right now, put those two fingers down and say to yourself, "I love you. I love you." Can I love myself so much that I can interrupt the habits and the patterns that I have created, that have been created? We all have a cue that triggers a habit, a routine, the habit itself, or the action I take, and then or some kind of reward I'm getting from that habit. This goes over and over, and it doesn't matter what we're talking about. We could be talking about the habit of thinking. If we're thinking about negative thoughts more than we're thinking of positive thoughts about ourselves or anything else, then we're in a negative habit loop that we can change. We're going to change it, like I said earlier, by just saying, no, thank you, I don't want you, and begin to create the positive that we want. We want to bring together our heart and our mind and our body into a place of healing. Another way to do this is to spend time each day meditating, connecting with our spirit, feeling our body, feeling the senses, our five senses, allowing our brain to calm down so that we can have that heart-brain coherence, allowing the cares of the world to evaporate. And I like to tell people, put them in a helium balloon for just a little bit of time and let them float away from you so that you can have that calm, peaceful feeling that will help us then have more clarity with the decisions and the actions that we have to take in our life. Self-care is the most important thing we can do to overcome our ill health, whether it's physical or mental, to take care of our mind and our thoughts, to follow the rules and never ever diminish ourselves, to take care of our physical health and body with positive, healthy foods, healthy thoughts, taking care of our spiritual health by releasing the negative emotions that we have and beliefs so that we can come to this place of peace, to take care of your emotions and to increase your own well-being through self-care. This is all totally worth it and will take you to a very happy place. One of my favorite songs is the Happy Song. I would love to turn it on right now for you, just for you to feel this happy place. And right before this talk today, I decided, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So I turned on the Happy Song and danced around the living room, and it put me in a beautiful, happy place to be able to share this information with you today. I want you to be free, free to be you in a happy place. Thank you, everybody. And now I have some time for questions. Anybody has any questions for me?
Thank you, Jill. Wow, that was really beautiful. Thank you so much. I would love for you to stop sharing your screen so that we could kind of get everybody on camera here. Anybody that's with us and wants to speak up and ask a question, any questions or comments? And go ahead and unmute yourself if you do have anything.
Amazing presentation, Jill. That was so, so full of information, so many points and places for people to go to pick out things that they might need. I would suggest that people listen to it again because there's so much that you have given to them. And to get in touch with you if they need some help with that. Yeah. Very, very nicely done. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet. I know I gave everybody a lot of information. Everybody might be going, whoa.
I had a question. If you can elaborate some on the self-soothing part.
Yeah, I didn't talk about that, but self-soothing in relation to this topic, I would swing back around and say you will soothe yourself by giving yourself better thoughts. So that's the first place. Your self-talk will begin to soothe you. And if you think about what is the most comforting thing that you could think of that you like? My kids gave me a big teddy bear one time. and I still have the teddy bear. It's a big one. and I like that teddy bear because it is soothing to me. I also have this amazing blanket that is so comforting to me, is and a warm shower. Warm showers are soothing to me. So I love looking at candles, and I love looking at the intricate details of flowers, different flowers. So it's what calls to you. It's what is it that makes your heart feel better? Very, very important, because boy, when we have mental stuff going on, it seems like all that there is negativity, negative emotions, negative thoughts. I just want to crawl in a cave, you know, which is what I wanted to do. but doing some of these very, very small self-soothing activities will cause a change. I actually was soothing myself before this talk when I put that song on and danced around the living room with the happy song. And it shifted my energy, and all of a sudden I got happy, and I wasn't thinking about this talk so much. I love music, right? I told you. And so I was in the mode of soothing myself with music and movement. So it could be that too. Some people really respond to music. So it's a self-choice, doing something that's going to make me feel just a little bit better than I do right now.
Jill, I love that you have
good ideas.
Yeah, I love that you have this as one of your rules. Like, it is a rule. If as a trauma therapist, I look in the lens of the nervous system, and self-soothing, I would say, is self-regulating. So just the same thing, I think, just different terms. And to be able to regulate your nervous system. And I love the examples you gave, because it was very body-based, right? Dancing, you're hearing, but you're moving your body. The shower, the warm blanket, the heavy blankets can help. I don't work with a client on deeper levels until I know they have the capacity to self-soothe or self-regulate. So if you're working with somebody that's really struggling with the ability to work with their brain and change the thoughts, it might be that they need to work with the body first to self-soothe. So I love that you have that on your list of rules. And I would say it's the number one thing before you go deeper with a client that's really struggling with depression, that could be rooted in deeper traumas, especially because their ability to self-soothe might be totally non-existent. So that's step number one. Help them learn to regulate their system first.
And the senses are very important. Right after my mother passed away, and I actually was quite at peace with my mother's passing. I didn't feel I was grieving, but I was at her home and going through stuff. And I went one morning, went into the shower, and I was thinking about her, and I started washing my hair. And instantly I had this thought, as if my mother, and she had long nails, she was lucky, as if my mother was the one that was washing my hair. And it was spiritual and sensory at the same time. And it just filled me with love, you know, her love and positive good thoughts about her.
That's a beautiful story. I love that. I love that. And that was soothing for you, right?
It was.
To have that and you were able to have the image and the sensation of that at the same time. And as a trauma therapist, that's what I do with my clients, that to self-soothe, we bring in all of the different sensations. So we could guide our clients through, or our family members, our kids, our spouses, our friends, guide them through a meditation where we bring in all of the senses. So you can go to a happy place in your mind and have the visual. What does it smell like there? What does it feel like there? What do you hear? Bringing in all of those senses to regulate and soothe your system.
Yeah.
Teach them that skill and then have them practice every day.
Exactly. I have a wonderful client that decided, he's 86, just a beautiful man. And he realized what he wanted to do every day was to notice things that gladden his heart. So every day He's because his mind is cued. And that's another thing, is that if we cue our mind to what we want, then our mind will begin to see it. Back to the very first slide, we'll begin to see it. And so then he's noticing things all day long. So he shared that with me, and now I'm looking for things that gladden my heart.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Any other comments or questions? Let's see. Look in the chat here. Thank you for such a heartfelt presentation from Valerie. Beautiful, Jill, from Lynn.
Thank you.
Nice comments. Do you have any other client stories that you could share with us from your work with your clients on this topic?
I do have a story of one woman who was struggling with depression. She had been in a treatment center for a while and ended up over in my office. And one of the things that I learned from her, because she was using essential oils, I was teaching her some of the things that I've taught you today. And one of the things that I noticed was that when she understood one of her values and followed it, she got greater peace. So she was a divorced woman, had two beautiful children, has some conflict going on with her husband, her ex-husband. And as she began to come to peace and understood what she felt was right and true, her truth, her wisdom, and she had greater peace from that. Which, again, if you think about a glass full of fizzy water, or she reduced some of that fizz in the glass by looking at her situation in a different way. Now, I also noticed that there were some parts of her life where she was not turning to her wisdom and her truth, where she still had a cloud over her mind. And because I had this experience with her, I came to understand that us as practitioners can teach and give love and do all that we can to help another person. But in the end, they are responsible for themselves. They're responsible for their own self-talk, for their own choices, whether or not they will or won't touch in to their spirit and their wisdom and their truth and activate faith. So she had a lessening of her depression from what she was doing. And then as she moved on, she was happy for a while. And now I'm noticing that she's, you know, still has some of those incongruencies, I would call them, with her heart and her mind kind of fighting with each other. Mm-hmm. So it was a good experience for me to have her as a client to understand the importance of how much responsibility I take versus how much responsibility my client is going to take for herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how easy it is for us. Most of us practitioners have big hearts and we want to help and we're caregivers and we want to love mm-hmm. them. And one of the best things we can do for them is to reflect back what we see within exactly. them that they can't see themselves.
Yeah.
I love how you articulated that. Like, you saw that there are places where she wasn't turning into her own wisdom. And we as practitioners we can point that out. We can point that out and help them see we can't see ourselves often mm-hmm. very well. So the relationship that we can create as practitioners with our clients and with our loved ones too, to be a safe enough relationship where we can give them honest feedback and they'll receive it mm-hmm. is such a crucial part, I think, of the relationship. And then to your point, to not take on the responsibility of their healing, but you can reflect back to them and share information with them and not be attached to the responsibility of their own healing.
I also just realized that and have for years known that there are universal truths. So when I say your truth, there are universal truths that every single human being can relate with and connect to. You know, that of love, that of forgiveness, which is why I brought those two things up, because I believe they're very, very important. And give, you know, a piece of our wisdom. Sometimes it's that forgiveness piece that a person hasn't forgiven that person from 20 years ago. And they think they have, but they really haven't. So.
And then to help them recognize that they haven't and how that might be showing up in their life now.
Right.
What is still here now that is inhibiting your happiness and your ability to think those happy thoughts and to feel happy.
Yeah. And I'm happy to say, I'm happy to say that I'm not depressed. you know, I'm so happy to say that, to say that I did some things along the way in what I shared with you today that helped me to heal. You know, does that mean I don't still have some wiring up there that might say, oh, you could go get depressed over that? You know, sure, I have some neural connections, I'm sure, that I will always work on changing.
But now you have the tools to do that.
I have tools, and if a negative thought comes by, and we all get negative thoughts, it just comes out of nowhere sometimes. It's not a bad thing. If it's looked at like, oh, I'm going to let that take me over, or I can just right then and there just say, no, thank you. But thanks for reminding me. I don't want to go over there to depression anymore. You know, that kind of thing.
Right. And I think it's so important to honor the fact that your brain is designed to have thoughts and your nervous system is designed to look out for signs of danger and signs of safety. And you're not doing anything wrong. In fact, it would be bad if we didn't have those responses, but it's our ability to control the reaction to it.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I really want to help my clients with that are dealing with depression and mental illness, is that it is normal to have some depression and some anxiety and have some negative thoughts. And some of us are wired into these repetitive patterns of depression and negativity. And in my experience, it never goes away totally.
Yeah.
Because it can't. For us to survive in a physical body, we have to have those reactions. But what we can do is not believe every negative thought. We have the ability to discern, is it true or not true, which was why I love you brought up Byron Katie's work, because that is the best tool I know of to help us to discern that. But it is normal. It is totally normal and okay to have these negative thoughts, to have these negative reactions, and to have a fear response and to have a defensive reaction. But we can learn to not stay stuck in it, right?
That's right. We can turn it around.
Oh, I just loved your presentation so much, Jill. Beautifully done. Really well said. Covered a lot, big picture stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see maybe version two of this, where we could break some of these parts down to a little bit more detail at some point.
Thank you, Kimberly. And everybody, thank you for being here and supporting me. I love all of you.
So. Any other comments or questions before we go?
Just to say thank you.
You are welcome. My pleasure.
All right, you guys. Thank you so much for being here live. We will make sure. Oh, hi, Judy. Nice to see you. We will we'll send out the replay, the recording, so that you guys can listen to it again. I know it was so much, like Janet said, it was so much information. It would be really great to go revisit this again when you have time to integrate it.
Exactly.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody. Day.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Okay. Thank you, Jill.
Whew. Thank you, Kimberly. You gave some great comments too. Appreciate you.
I hope I didn't interfere too much, but no, I wanted actually, to just get the conversation going.
Yeah, I thought it was perfect. What, you know, things that you added into it. So thank you so much. Really appreciate your support.
Awesome. You can check that off your list. You got
I know.
That done. You went in and did it. Good job. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I will send a note that we can edit the first 10 minutes out and get the replay out soon. So
all right,
thank you.
Great. Thanks, Kimberly. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.